Today on KPR Presents, in the wake of last week's historic summit between the United States and North Korea, we remember those Americans who served in the Korean War. Today's KPR Presents was originally broadcast on June 27, 2010, as America marked the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. It was 60 years ago this month that North Korean troops crossed the 38th parallel and the Korean War broke out. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we commemorate the 60th anniversary of what is often called the Forgotten War. One of the biggest ceremonies honoring veterans of the Korean War was held in Independence, Missouri, organized by the Truman Library Institute and sponsored by the Veterans of Foreign Wars. We'll hear highlights from the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony, including the keynote address by General David Petraeus, head of the U.S. Central Command. We'll also hear from Ambassador Chul-hu of the Republic of Korea and from Clifton Truman Daniel, grandson of Harry Truman, who made the decision to send 1.8 million American troops to Korea. Opening remarks at the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony were made by Congressman Ike Skelton, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee.
60 years ago this month, President Harry Truman made the agonizing decision to use American troops to lead the United Nations resistance to the communist invasion of South Korea. In that conflict over the next 3 years, more than 54,000 Americans paid the ultimate price, and 110,000 Americans were either wounded or missing in action. These statistics remind us that the slogan, "Freedom is not free." The sacrifices of American service members purchased the freedom that South Koreans enjoy to this day, a freedom that continues with the help of our superb military. June of 1950 found America on the road to recovery from the Second World War. Service members returned home to a grateful nation, many of whom took advantage of the GI Bill to further their education and to buy a home. But the peace on the Korean Peninsula was shattered when the North Korean troops advanced into the South. Some, like Bob Shirky, who distinguished himself 5 years earlier in the Philippines, found himself in an Army uniform and on a battlefield. Brooklyn native Robert DeVoy was in the Pusan area during the early trying days of the war. After the brilliant Incheon landing, the fighting advanced to the Yellow River when the Chinese troops entered the fray. It was then that the young Lieutenant Bob Kingston provided great leadership, which foretold the distinguished Army career, rising to the rank and the command that our keynote speaker holds today. The conflict reached my hometown of Lexington. Air Force pilot Vance Frick was shot down and became a prisoner of war in the North. My Boy Scout buddy, Richard Yates, my Wentworth Military Academy friend, James Sparks, my high school classmate, Barney Rostein, were all killed in action. Well into the conflict, the commander of the Allied and American forces, Douglas MacArthur, advocated expanding the conflict contrary to his mission orders, causing President Truman to relieve him of command. It was then that my father, a longtime friend of Harry Truman, telegraphed the White House, "The Truman Library holds the original documents that read, 'Dear Mr. President, your Lexington friends support you fully in relieving MacArthur. Those making political capital out of this incident will get nowhere. That you should have relieved MacArthur before now is the general opinion here.'" President Truman responded to his Lexington friend, "Dear Ike, my sincere thanks for your message. Your assurances that I was right in this difficult decision to make a change of command in the Far East means much to me. The key military lesson America learned from the Korean conflict came from the unfortunate experience of Task Force Smith. We learned painfully of the importance of sending forces into battle only when they are adequately trained and equipped. That lesson remains a primary precept for our military today. So this morning we come together to honor those who fought, those who are lost, and those families who experienced the anguish of separation and loss. America remembers.
That was Missouri Congressman Ike Skelton, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee and honorary co-chair of the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony, held June 21st at the Community of Christ Auditorium in Independence, Missouri. This event was organized by the Harry Truman Library Institute under the leadership of the next speaker, Clifton Truman Daniel.
As the oldest of President Truman's grandsons and the honorary chairman of the Truman Library Institute, I'm often asked to share my perspective on Grandpa's presidency and legacy, and frequently I'm asked what Grandpa would have thought of this or that headline, this or that controversy, this or that social trend. My usual joke is that I have yet to channel Harry Truman, as interesting as that might turn out to be. But today is different. Today, I think that I would know exactly what my grandfather would do if he were here, if he were able to be here. I believe he would leave his prepared remarks at the podium and walk down the aisles to look into the eyes and shake the hand of each of you here today who was asked to risk everything in the defense of our democratic ideals. He would say, thank you. He would say, I know the suffering of a soldier. And he would want to say, I thought of you every day for the rest of my life. On June 25th, 1950, Grandpa was just up the road here in his Independence home. About 9:20 p.m., in the calm, stately Victorian-style house at 219 North Delaware, he was interrupted by a ringing telephone, and it was Secretary of State Dean Acheson. Mr. President, I have some serious news, he said. The North Koreans have invaded South Korea. Grandpa immediately made his first decision on this unexpected outbreak of hostilities in Korea. He authorized Secretary Acheson to request a special meeting of the United Nations Security Council. Convinced that communist North Korea was backed in this aggression by the Soviet Union, Grandpa quickly returned to Washington and made a series of momentous decisions that would change the course of world history. Grandpa would later say that his decision to commit U.S. troops to a United Nations force in Korea was the most difficult of his presidency. He knew he would be ordering American soldiers, sailors, and airmen into deadly combat. He was also suspected that his decisive action could, if not coupled with restraint, lead to the initiation of a third world war and a possible nuclear confrontation with the Soviet Union. While historians continue to examine and debate the origins of the Korean War, there is no question that today South Korea is a vibrant democracy and an important U.S. ally in Southeast Asia. If some of us have forgotten the price that was paid on the Korean Peninsula 6 decades ago, my grandfather never did. After he left the White House, he moved back into the house on Delaware Street, walked to his office nearly every day, and after his death in 1972, the staff of the Truman Library found an envelope in one of his desk drawers in his working office. And inside was a letter, and with it was a Purple Heart. The letter was from the father of a fallen soldier, and his anguished message was accompanied by the Purple Heart that his son, killed in action in Korea, had been awarded. In his pain, the grieving father had written, "I wish it had been your daughter." Grandpa read the letter, carefully folded it back into its envelope, and found a place for it in his office where it would be easily found, where it could not be forgotten. So what would your old commander-in-chief say if he could be here today? To each of you, he would say, your service, your sacrifice, and your heroism was never and will never be forgotten. And that is why we are here today, to remember, to understand, and to honor. The Truman Library Institute, which is the nonprofit member-supported partner of the Truman Presidential Library and Museum, is proud to play a leading role in the world's commemoration of that fight for freedom. The Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony has been made possible by the generosity of so many partners, and I'd like to take a moment now to highlight a few of those. First, I would like to thank the Truman Library Institute Board of Directors and the Korea 60 Honorary Committee for their early and strong support of our vision for this ceremony. Specifically, I would like to thank our honorary co-chairman, U.S. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, and Congressman Ike Skelton, chair of the House Armed Services Committee, who carried our invitation to his good friend, General Petraeus, to be with us today. And as we know you are, we are deeply honored by the General's presence here today. We owe a debt of gratitude to U.S. Senator Kit Bond, whose invaluable and dedicated guidance helped this ceremony grow to become an international focal point for the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. Of course, behind every successful congressman, senator, or four-star general, aside from their spouses, is a stellar staff of individuals who work tirelessly on the details. Thanks for all your hard work, all of you, over the past few months. And finally, we wish to thank the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth for their generous support and for their attendance here today. I hope you will take time to note all our Korea 60 sponsors listed in your program, but two deserve our public thanks. First, I wish to invite you to join me in thanking the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, our VFW, for coming on board as the title sponsor of today's event. Commander-in-Chief Thomas J. Tradewell, would you please stand and accept our thanks? From the outset, we knew that we wanted the doors to be open to all who wished to attend. The event was offered at no charge. We were all even spared the usual ticket processing fees charged by Central Ticket Office, thanks to our free admission sponsor, the Government of the Republic of Korea, through the Korean Consulate General in Chicago, Illinois. Ambassador Chul Hyu, would you please stand? We are so very grateful for your attendance here today. We are so proud to have so many Korean War veterans, heroes, in the auditorium with us today. And we are grateful to the nearly 2,000 of you who traveled across land and sea to honor and be honored. For some, this Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony has come too late. And many who were sent to Korea never came home. They are in our hearts. They are here in spirit. It is for them that we now ask for a moment of silence.
Attending the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony was a delegation from the Republic of Korea, including Ambassador Chul Hyu from the Korean Consulate in Chicago.
It is my honor and privilege to be here today. I thank Congressman Ike Skelton and the Truman Library Institute for allowing me and my government to be a part of this solemn and meaningful occasion. And I'm grateful to all the dignitaries present here, including especially Governor Nixon, Senator Bond, Congressman Cleaver, and General Petraeus for honoring Korean War veterans with their presence. Korean War veterans, you are our heroes. You came to an unknown land in your youth, fought for freedom, and defended my country. Without your sacrifice, Korea would not be what it is today. The world would not be what it is today. Of course, we are proud of what Korea has become after the war. But we all know that any pride we can take in today's Korea was conceived 60 years ago in the blood, sweat, and tears you shed in Korea. And that pride grew in the love and friendship you have shown for Korea all along. This year, the least my government should do would be to express gratitude in a proper manner for what America did for us. And I've come up with a method of doing that, which I hope you like more than listening to a lengthy statement by a consul general. Let me now present to you a special video message from Korea commemorating the 60th anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War.
Sixty years ago, you came to an unknown land to preserve freedom and peace. We still remember your gallantry and sacrifice. The unexpected war put everything into chaos, and we had to put our lives on the line to protect the future of our nation. Then, you gave a warm helping hand to us in times of hardship and despair. It's still vivid in my memory that you came to help us in the name of friendship. When our country's peace was at stake, you came running into danger that might separate you from your loved ones for good. In a country you never heard of, despite challenging weather and fear of war, you devoted yourself to defend our freedom and the Republic of Korea. Do you remember the time we spent together? Even though we didn't speak the same language, we were all of one mind. We fought days and nights in severe cold, enduring injuries. We shed tears for the death of our innocent fellow soldiers. Your valor and sacrifice served as a foundation for us to regain hope. In the poorest country that was expected to take more than 100 years to rise from the ashes of war, we exerted every effort to recover from the war. With the sweat we shed, we began to make a history of a miracle amid the ruins of war. 60 years after the war, today, Korea emerged as the 10th largest economic power in the world and became the chair of the G20, as well as a proud member of the United Nations. Now, Korea is leaping towards a better future. Korea became the first country that transformed itself from an aid recipient to a donor and is reaching out to those in need across the globe. will always remember your noble sacrifice. And warm heart that offered help in the name of friendship. My dearest friend, you will always be our hero.
Thank you, Korean War veterans. Thank you, America.
That was a message from the Republic of Korea, introduced by Ambassador Chul Hoo. You're listening to highlights from the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony. This is Kansas Public Radio. Still ahead on KPR Presents, General David Petraeus of the U.S. Central Command. But first, many area lawmakers attended this event, including Kansas Congressman Dennis Moore, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon, Missouri Senator Kit Bond, and our next speaker, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver.
On this 60th anniversary of the Korean War, I am privileged to welcome Korean veterans, dignitaries, and guests to the district that I represent, and the place that Harry S. Truman called home. The man from Independence presided over our nation in one of the most transitional times in U.S. history. He was sensitive to what was morally correct and governed with the courage to rebuke his critics and fight the good for all of humanity. History tells us that in 1948, President Truman signed Executive Order 9981 with the purpose of eliminating segregation and the armed forces. But historical records fail, I think, to adequately illustrate the impetus of that order on civil rights in America. When I make speeches around the country, I tell them that the modern civil rights movement began in Independence, Missouri, with Harry Truman. Today, many of our population fail to understand the mood of America during post-World War II and the great divide in our country when it came to race and religion. My father, Lucky Cleaver, served in the Army during World War II, as did his two brothers, my uncles, Leroy and Emanuel Cleaver, who served as Tuskegee Airmen. This past January, I visited my uncle, who's 86 years old, in Atwater, California. And as the person named for him, because my grandmother didn't know whether or not he was going to return home from the war, and so she forced her son, my father, to name me Emanuel. And so I was in Atwater, and my uncle said to me, I want you to just follow me around the house. I want to show you the things that I'm leaving to you. And he pulled open a chair that had a bottom to it that opened into some kind of a little vault. And he showed me $200 or $300. And then he took me to other drawers and up into the attic. And then finally, he took me to the closet in his bedroom. And he said, and in here is what you will appreciate the most. And so I'm thinking, now he's getting to the money. And he opened the door and pulled out his bomber jacket. And he said, I have saved this all these years for you. And that told me how much it meant to him that he had indeed had the opportunity to fight for his country. I can only imagine the daily obstacles they encountered, but they remained steadfast and loyal to the United States of America. The greatest irony was that our country did not recognize them as equals with their military peers. Jim Crow, with all of the ugliness associated with discrimination, extended throughout every portion of our country, our government, and sadly, even the military. The executive order of Harry Truman would establish a gradual paradigm shift in military race relations that slowly began to unfold during the Korean conflict at the end of World War II. Japan surrendered North Korea to the Soviet Union and South Korea to the United States, leaving Korea divided and primed for Cold War tensions. On June 25, 1950, the North invaded South Korea, and President Truman initiated a United Nations response. Many veterans from World War II were recalled to active duty to fight alongside new recruits and into a slowly changing, integrated U.S. military. As black units were gradually absorbed, the famed Tuskegee Airmen lost their historic identity as they merged into the new United States Air Force. By 1953, it was reported that 95% of African-American soldiers served in an integrated Army unit, thanks to Harry Truman. After the war, many Korean veterans came home with respect for the men they fought with and would no longer tolerate disrespect of fellow black soldiers. This new attitude and the demand for respect for all that served sent crippling currents throughout our country that would culminate in the civil rights movement of the 1960s and 70s. The Korean War has been called a forgotten war, but there is not a Korean veteran here today that will ever forget the war that saved South Korea from the grips of communism. This was the first time in the history of our country that we went to war with a military that would slowly erase the color line on the battlefield. Every Korean veteran faced the horrors of war and lives with the memories. You are a generation of Americans who, for the first time in our history, fought without regard to race, creed, or color, but together as Americans. You are our patriots who fought back the threat of communism and turned our country toward the path of equal rights. It is the veterans from the Korean War that quietly returned and made an impact on this great country. We mourn for those who died, for those who remain missing. And we honor all you and your families here today. Thank you, Korean veterans. May God bless you and the United States of America.
That was Missouri Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. You've been listening to highlights from the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony, a Truman Library Institute event marking the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre. Today's KPR Presents is an encore presentation from June 2010, marking the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. We'll have more from this ceremony held in Independence, Missouri, right after this. Today on KPR Presents, it's an encore broadcast from June 29th, 2010. in the wake of last week's historic summit between the United States and North Korea, we're revisiting the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. The Truman Presidential Library Institute hosted this Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony in 2010. Hundreds of veterans attended the event in Independence, Missouri. It was said to be the largest ceremony in the United States, honoring the 1.8 million Americans who served in the Korean War. The keynote speaker at the event was General David Petraeus. At the time, he was serving as head of the U.S. Central Command. He would go on to serve as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency from 2011 to 2012, a position he resigned after an FBI investigation and allegations that an extramarital affair led to his leaking classified information. But in 2010, at the time of the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony, he was at the top of a long and distinguished military career.
Good morning to you all, and thanks for that very warm welcome. Thanks, Chairman Skelton, for your very kind introduction and for your words of tribute to all the current and former troopers here. More importantly, thanks for the wonderful leadership you provided the House Armed Services Committee to ensure that our troopers have had what they've needed for the difficult missions we've called on them to perform in recent years, in particular, to ensure, as you noted, that there are no more Task Force Smiths. Indeed, I want to extend my appreciation to all the distinguished public servants who have spoken here this morning, who are in the audience here with us, for their abiding concern for and continued support of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen and their families, especially since 9/11. I suppose I should begin this morning by reassuring everyone here that I'm keenly aware that I'm the last in a long line of speakers. In fact, as I was looking over the program earlier, I was reminded of the young schoolboy's report on Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was born a long time ago, the little boy explained to his classmates. He was a great general. He won some important battles. He made a long speech. They killed him. I'll do my best to avoid Caesar's fate today. And thanks for laughing. You know what they say, when you reach my station in life, you're only as good as the material they give you. In all seriousness, though, I'd be remiss if I moved on without thanking a number of groups. First, the staffs of the Truman Library and the Truman Library Institute. In addition to the work that you do to honor, remember, and capture and share the history of one of our nation's greatest presidents, your efforts to commemorate the Korean War and to share the important stories of the millions of Americans who served during it have been truly impressive, and we thank you for that. Our thanks must also go to the veterans of foreign wars. National Commander Thomas Tradewell and his VFW colleagues did an extraordinary amount of great work to make today's great event possible. Indeed, as it has for more than 110 years, the VFW continues to be a standard-bearing organization of veterans helping other veterans and serving local communities. Indeed, thanks to all who had a hand in pulling together today's opportunity to thank and honor our Korean War veterans. And I should note here as well how nice it is to see so many current service members, military family members, and local supporters as we recognize the heroes in the seats in front of me. As President Truman's grandson recounted for us a few minutes ago, 60 years ago in this very city, President Truman received the news that North Korea had attacked across the 38th parallel. The tranquility of the land of the morning calm had been disrupted, and the Cold War had turned hot for the first time. As was true so often throughout his presidency, President Truman immediately grasped the significance of the moment, and he and his administration went to work. Within 48 hours, he ordered U.S. forces to help South Korea. And on the same day as that decision, the United Nations passed a resolution urging member states to assist in the so-called police action against the North Korean aggressors. Thus began a three-year struggle to secure the liberty of the Korean people and to make clear the resolve of the Western world against the threat of advancing communism. Under the flag of the United Nations and alongside the troopers of more than 20 other nations, from Belgium and Britain to Thailand and Turkey, nearly 1.8 million American troopers answered our nation's call to serve. Over 400 of these men and women, these heroes seated right in front of us here today, are with us to receive our thanks. Each of them knows personally and deeply the difficult struggle that was the Korean War, the frustrating cycle of advance, retreat, and stalemate. They lived the daring landing at Incheon, the fierce fighting around the Chosin Reservoir, the long nights of the Battle of Porkchop Hill. They faced the seemingly endless onslaughts of enemy forces and pressed on through the terrible grind of constant combat. They endured extraordinarily harsh physical conditions, the debilitating heat of the humid summers, and the numbing cold of the frozen winters. They persevered through the daily wait on word from home and on news from the seemingly endless negotiations at Panmunjom. And they suffered through the loss of their comrades in arms, the brothers alongside whom they'd fought day after day and night after night. In the face of those challenges, they and all our troopers demonstrated extraordinary commitment and extraordinary courage. Our men have fought with grim gallantry, President Truman observed at the time, going on to note that all of us, especially those of us who are old soldiers, know how worthy they are of a place on that long and honored roll of those who created and preserved liberty for our country. The grim gallantry of which President Truman spoke is now forever and hauntingly memorialized in the 19 statues of the National Korean War Memorial in our nation's capital, as well as in the more than 2,500 faces on the memorial's mural wall and in the inscriptions on its pool of remembrance. More than 50 years before that long-awaited memorial was dedicated, the grim gallantry it was created to honor was epitomized by individuals like Marine Private First Class Richard Nightingale. While serving as a squad leader with the 1st Marine Division in Korea, PFC Nightingale was advancing with his unit into a vicious, bloody battle when he came across a group of Marines in a trench line who were survivors from another company. Unhesitatingly, he assumed command of these Marines, then picked up an automatic rifle and moved into an exposed position from which he would pour devastating fire onto the enemy, and from which, when he ran out of ammunition for his rifle, he engaged the enemy with grenades. While searching for more ammunition, he found an unmanned machine gun and moved through still intense hostile fire to place that weapon in a position from which he could once again engage the enemy. Wounded and under continuous fire, he maintained his position with the machine gun throughout the night and into the morning, ignoring his injuries to engage enemy forces each time they sought to overrun his fellow Marines. For his heroism during that battle, PFC Nightingale was awarded the Silver Star Medal, our nation's third highest award for valor. The same kind of extraordinary courage was also displayed by Army Sergeant Francis Schwartz. Sergeant Schwartz was serving with the 38th Infantry Regiment in Taptongni, Korea in 1952 when his platoon was given the mission of capturing a critical portion of Hill 266. Old Baldy, as the American troopers called it, a name that accurately described the exposure of the hilltop. After Sergeant Schwartz's platoon spearheaded a successful assault to rout the enemy defenders and secure the platoon's objective, the enemy conducted a vicious counterattack, trying to retake the strategic position they had just lost. Recognizing the decisiveness of the moment, Sergeant Schwartz rallied a small force to advance into the counterattacking enemy forces in order to break their will. The American element succeeded in doing just that, though Sergeant Schwartz and many of his comrades were wounded in the fierce fighting that ensued. In need of more firepower to hold the position, Sergeant Schwartz ignored his wounds, moved to the rear to get a machine gun from another platoon, and then returned to his men through further hostile fire. As the enemy launched yet another attack to dislodge the American forces, Sergeant Schwartz saw a wounded comrade lying exposed in front of his position. Charging forward, he killed four enemy soldiers with his carbine and then knocked out a fifth with the butt of his weapon after running out of ammunition. Hit again himself, he low-crawled the remaining feet to the aid of his wounded comrade and then dragged him to safety. Only later, after he was seriously wounded by an enemy grenade, did Sergeant Schwartz allow himself to be evacuated from the battlefield. He was later awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, our nation's second highest award for valor, for his heroic actions that September day. And ladies and gentlemen, both of these heroes are here with us today, and I'd ask that you join me in recognizing Richard Nightingale and Francis Schwartz. We are here this morning, of course, to remember Francis Schwartz, Richard Nightingale, and all the others who served, those who perished, and those who are still missing in Korea. Today, we honor the millions of courageous men and women who, as the inscription states on the National Korean War Memorial, answered the call to defend a country they never knew and a people they never met. Most importantly, today, we say to each of the Korean War veterans here and to all those across our great country who fought with you, thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your courage, and thank you for your sacrifice, and thank you for what you accomplished for our country and for the world. You should know that your actions continue to echo in the minds and lives of so many, from the Korean people for whom you fought, as you heard earlier, to the American people who still today benefit from the determined stand you made against communism, to those of us who serve in uniform today. Indeed, despite the Korean War's description as the forgotten war, your service and your sacrifice are far from forgotten. You are certainly far from being forgotten by the people of the Republic of Korea, a people who today enjoy prosperity and freedoms beyond the very comprehension of their malnourished, impoverished brethren north of the 38th parallel, a people who have established what is now one of the most vibrant, most modern economies and democracies in the world. Their gratitude for what you enabled them to achieve is signified today in many ways, from President Lee's message, to the Korean government's support of this ceremony, to the presence of Consul General Chul Hoo, and the ROK officers who are attending Fort Leavenworth's Command and General Staff College this year and are here with us this morning. Through your actions in Korea, you earned the eternal thanks of a nation which has become one of America's closest friends and allies. Indeed, the motto of the 8th U.S. Army soldiers currently serving in the Republic of Korea, "We go together," has come to characterize far more than just our military relationship on the Korean Peninsula itself. Indeed, American and Korean troopers have proudly served alongside each other in many endeavors over the last 60 years, including in Vietnam and more recently in Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, during my time as the commander of the surge in Iraq, I was privileged to serve with the troopers of the great Zaytun Division, who helped the Iraqis of Erbil Province maintain security and capitalize on their new opportunities. Our nation's long partnership and the Republic of Korea's status as a player on the global stage are also exemplified by the medical care and vocational training that Korean forces provide today in Afghanistan's Parwan province, and by the other contributions Korea makes to the effort in Afghanistan. In short, in answering the call to serve and defend the Korean people 60 years ago, you earned for America a hugely important partner and the enduring gratitude of its people. But you are not just remembered by the Korean people, you're also far from forgotten by the countless Americans who understand and appreciate the foundations you helped lay for the West to emerge victorious from the Cold War. Indeed, the challenge to which you responded continues to loom large in historical terms. As President Truman reflected on his decision to send you and your comrades to Korea, he noted that his thoughts kept coming back to the 1930s. Here was history repeating itself, he would explain to the American people. Here was another probing action, another testing action. If we let the Republic of Korea go under, some other country would be next, and then another. And all the time, the courage and the confidence of the free world would be ebbing away. In the face of this challenge, your generation played its part with great courage and great valor. You participated in one of the most significant initial stands against communism, demonstrating the resolve of the free world in the face of a growing communist threat. You signaled to the world the same resolve that would see America and the West through more than four long decades of cold and sporadically hot war. And in so doing, you earned the eternal thanks of a nation that has occasionally been slow to express its gratitude. But today's ceremony and others like it throughout our country are clear demonstrations of the fact that millions of Americans understand and appreciate what you did for our country at a critical moment in its history. The critical moment that you helped us face in 1950 has, in fact, a number of similarities to the challenges our troopers face today. Indeed, our Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, has noted that, and I quote, "As was true in the Cold War, overcoming violent extremists will require a long, sustained effort measured in decades rather than years. And as with the Cold War, there will be disappointments and divisions and setbacks. Consider that the Korean War ended in frustrating stalemate during the early 1950s. But the initial stand taken by the United Nations and the commitment that followed allowed South Korea to develop into an economic powerhouse and a vibrant, free society. As you did 60 years ago, our troopers today face a new kind of threat in a new kind of war, one in which, as was the case during the Cold War, there can be no quick flag planting and declaration of victory. That's why I'd like to conclude today by emphasizing to each of the Korean War veterans here that you are far from forgotten as well by those of us who wear the uniform today. Indeed, we are all inheritors of the tradition of service, commitment, and sacrifice that you passed on. It is occasionally said that those of us who serve in uniform today, in fact, stand on the shoulders of those who served in our ranks before us. You should know that because of the character of your service, we stand very tall indeed. We can never forget your sacrifice, your commitment, your valor, because, again, we stand on your shoulders. In fact, the reason so many current service members have joined us this morning, the reason I'm here today, is quite simply to demonstrate and express our gratitude for the pride, inspiration, and courage we draw from you and your fellow veterans. So on behalf of those troopers with us today and the more than 215,000 soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen currently performing tough and important missions in the U.S. Central Command region, I want to express again our deepest thanks to each of you. I know that some of you we recognize today have arrived at a point in your lives when individuals inevitably begin to wonder what kind of footsteps they have left in the sands of time. Well, all of us here and countless others across our great nation want to assure you today that you have written a proud chapter in the history of our military and our nation, and that you have left huge footsteps and a clearly marked path of service, sacrifice, and courage. Your grim gallantry and the valor of your comrades who perished or are still missing in the mountains and rice paddies of Korea will never be forgotten. And today's event demonstrates that. Indeed, it has been a great privilege to join the nearly 2,000 patriots here today in expressing our enduring, heartfelt gratitude for your heroism during a critical moment in the history of our nation and our world. It should, in fact, be the hope of all Americans that our nation will always have courageous men and women like you. Courageous men and women like those who are now walking in the footsteps that you left for those of subsequent generations to follow as well. May God bless you all. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to highlights from the Korean War Veterans Appreciation Ceremony, marking the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. The keynote speaker at this event was General David Petraeus. At the time, he was serving as the head of the U.S. Central Command. Today's KPR Presents was originally broadcast on June 29, 2010. For the rest of this hour, we leave Korea behind and set our sights on Pluto with KPR News Director Jay Schaefer.
Imagine standing here on Earth and shooting a BB at the moon and then hitting the exact pebble you were aiming for at the bottom of a lunar crater. Sounds difficult, right? Well, that's one way of describing NASA's New Horizons mission to the planet Pluto. Pluto lies deep in our solar system, more than 3 billion miles away from Earth, and the planet itself is smaller than our own moon. And yet, on July 14, 2015, New Horizons flew past Pluto and sent back amazing photographs and a wealth of information. The story of how this happened and how it almost didn't happen are told in a new book, Chasing New Horizons, the inside epic first mission to Pluto. The book was written by planetary scientist Alan Stern and astrobiologist David Grinspoon, two of the smartest men on the planet, and they join me now. Welcome and thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks a lot for having us.
Hey, good morning.
Dr. Stern, you were the mission leader for the New Horizons project. Help us put this mission to Pluto in context. I mean, give us an idea of just how daunting this challenge was.
Well, it was daunting, and it took a lot of tenacity and persistence on the part of very many people to actually make this dream come true. It started in the late 1980s and early 1990s with young scientists and some young engineers who really wanted to explore the farthest planet.
Can you summarize the objectives of this mission? I mean, it was more than just getting better photographic images of Pluto, right?
We had very detailed scientific objectives, not just take a picture, but to assay the atmosphere, to understand the surface composition, to study all of the 5 satellites, the moons of Pluto, and much more.
Let's bring in Dr. David Grinspoon, who co-wrote the book Chasing New Horizons. As Kansans, many of us are especially proud of the fact that a 24-year-old Kansas farm kid named Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto in 1930. And then, 85 years later, another Kansan, Glenn Fountain, helped lead this mission to Pluto as the project manager.
You know, you should be proud of Clyde Tombaugh. As an American, I'm proud of him. It's an amazing story that we want more people to know about. And I'm glad you also mentioned Glenn Fountain, who's another hero of New Horizons, also from Kansas. And, you know, he's one of the people whose voices wind through this book as we tell this human and technical story of how we got a mission to Pluto.
It's utterly complicated to communicate with the New Horizons spacecraft. I say that because it's not a matter of hitting a button and giving this thing instructions, and the spacecraft gets those instructions right away. There's a time lapse because the spacecraft is so far out there in space. Tell us just briefly about that.
Yeah, well, it takes 4.5 hours to get a signal from Earth to Pluto. You know, in science class, we always teach how the speed of light is so fast. And it is. But at that distance, when you're on this team trying to communicate with your stricken spacecraft, the speed of light seems so bloody slow. It takes 9 hours for a round trip call. And so when there's something wrong with your spacecraft, it takes 9 hours to say, hey, what's going on? And the spacecraft to say, well, I'm okay, I'm here, but tell me what to do.
As you mentioned, the New Horizons had, shall we say, an interesting payload, perhaps unique in the history of NASA, under an ounce of the cremated remains of Clyde Tombaugh. Was this unique in the history of sending spacecraft from Earth? Or
Tombaugh, who of course was legend in the field of astronomy and planetary science, had known that we were studying how to fly a mission to Pluto in the 90s, and he unfortunately passed at the age of 91 in early 1997. Before he died, he had said, if you guys make this happen, I would be honored if you could fly my remains, even a bit of them, out there. It made us feel very special.
Planetary scientists Alan Stern and astrobiologist David Grinspoon, they are the co-authors of the new-ish book, Chasing New Horizons, the inside epic first mission to Pluto. And we highly recommend it. Gentlemen, I have to let you go quickly. I want to schedule another interview so we can talk about why Pluto is a planet. Just kidding. We'll pick that up at some future date.
That's Jay Schaefer. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.